From Politico, this is Women Rule, where we bring you real talk with women bosses. I'm Anna Palmer, senior Washington correspondent and co-author of the Politico Playbook.
That is the problem, Madam President, always Madam President. I am not complaining. I wanted to be first. I fought to be first. And of course, I knew the cure for sexism would come with side effects. But my God, Liv, it never turns off. You never stop being president. Not for 1 minute. It's all missiles and treaties and worrying about the safety of the nation every minute of the day.
Actress Bellamy Young is the first female president of the United States. Of course, in the fictional world of ABC's hit drama Scandal. Young played Republican Melly Grant, came to a political career as the wife of a former U.S. president. Sound familiar? In real life, Young is politically active. During the 2016 presidential election, she was an outspoken surrogate for Hillary Clinton, and she even traveled around with a campaign to several states.
For me, the 2016 race was very easy and very clear. I did 8 states. And it was, it turned out to be a real joy. It was a heartbreak ultimately.
We spoke with Young recently after she wrapped up filming 7 seasons with the Shonda Rhimes show. Young reflected back on that entire transformative experience and talked at length about the politics of the show and the entertainment industry in general. When we spoke with the actress in downtown Los Angeles, Young also discussed her career in Hollywood and the women who played starring roles in Young's own rise to fame. Stay tuned for our interview with Bellamy Young. On the podcast, we'll be bringing you real talk with women bosses, asking how did you make it, and what advice would you give a woman looking to lead? If you're a fan of the show, please subscribe to Women Rule on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us and leave a review. And please share our episodes on social media. Follow me on Twitter at @APalmerDC. Women Rule is produced by Politico in partnership with our founding partners, Google and the Tory Burch Foundation. And now, our interview with Bellamy Young. Bellamy, thank you so much for joining us. We're here today in Los Angeles, where you've just wrapped up several years working on the hit TV drama Scandal, and you've just recently started out a new pilot project, an ABC comedic soap called False Prophets. I wanted to start with a look back at the role a lot of us, particularly in Washington, know you for on Scandal. You've been on the show since the very beginning, and your specific role on the show evolved over time. For anybody who didn't watch it, you played Melly Grant, who was the first lady, the wife of the U.S. president in the first season of the show, but later you become president yourself. How are you feeling after coming off of 7 seasons of Scandal?
Like the luckiest person in the world. I mean, I've always been a journeyman actor. It's all I've ever done. It's such a joyful life in so many ways, but you're very peripatetic and very, you know, at the mercy, particularly as a woman and particularly as you age. And I was 40 when this pilot season happened, and it was called Damage Control at that point, Scandal. And Damage Control was by far the best pilot out there that year, and Carrie was already attached, and Tony was attached, and I was so happy to go in just for a 2-line part that shot the next day, and Tony had directed me in something, so I had an idea about who would be the woman that stood beside Tony Goldwyn, and sort of went in with that, and we got picked up, and was only supposed to be there for 3 episodes. And then they just realized the vast number of women that Melly was holding space for, the women for whom they'd sort of gotten into a first you, then me situation, and the then me never comes, or the person who's still in love, but the love is now suddenly unrequited, or the person who is in a situation that their potential far outstrips their possibility at the present moment. And they just started writing this character, and they asked me to be a series regular the second season. So I was, you know, brought on late. I was, you know, but so happy to be there. And then, you know, I sound like I drank the Kool-Aid, and I keep drinking the Kool-Aid because I know we also, none of us were children, so we all knew how lucky we were, and we savored every minute.
Talk about that. You've said that playing Melly changed you at a molecular level.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I'm a big believer in like neuroplasticity, that we're all here to learn, we're all evolve and keep evolving if we keep showing up for the opportunities at hand. And 17 hours a day with a woman is so different from the woman that I am, changes you. And Melly, for all her faults, and they're myriad, she tries. She always tries. She can go out, fall flat on her face, or humiliate herself, or betray everyone, but she can shake it off and keep marching forward like the Terminator. I mean, she really, really has a forward motion, and I am very given to introspection and second-guessing and beating myself up and self-flagellation, and I tell you what, there's no momentum in any of that, and I've tried it for all these years, and Melly's way has, it really has benefits. So I feel I move at a different speed now because of her. I feel like I have a lot more faith in myself because of her. It's also, you know, as women, we're often chastised for not speaking up for ourselves, but it is an equal part of the equation as being listened to. And 6 years of being listened to, 6 years of having a strong voice and people stopping, listening, and responding, not always with respect, but always listening and always responding, that also changes you.
Talk about this to us. We talk a lot on Women Rule about women building each other up, networks, how you create them, how you maintain them. This is pretty relevant to your career, both in your fictional career on Scandal and your real career in Hollywood, in the entertainment industry. What lessons have you learned about that from people like Shonda Rhimes, who created Scandal?
I just know that now more than ever, we need to give people a forum. You know, stories need to be told. For so long, at least in my industry, it was, well, in for so many industries, it was white straight men. And they told the stories, and they thought they were making the stories for each other, and no one else was really considered. So it's been incredible and instructive to be working in this matriarchy for these 6 years. On the very fundamental level, for example, she'll say, she said to us very early on, I may need to write you a sex scene. And I'm going to need to write that sex scene because I got to move the story forward. But if you want me to write that sex scene in a parka, then I will write you in a parka. Like, you're just safe. You're never an object. You're a being of agency. And what's important is the story. And what's important is your character's dreams and conflicts and all of that. Now I feel finally people are seeing the economic value and the richness of our stories and the tenacity of our hearts, the way we've always, you know, made lives, cared for lives, you know, that how Sisyphean it's all been. Oh, they're like, suddenly it's so interesting. It's always been interesting, and we've always cared a lot, and we've always tried really hard. So, but now we get to lift each other up.
Talk about that, because I think one of the things when you think about Hollywood, and I can see it in journalism, when there's only one slot, right? And oftentimes, instead of building each other up, we're trying to kind of elbows people out just to get the job, or because there aren't enough roles. What advice do you have for the women listening about, you know, maybe your the first instinct might be always to kind of put yourself forward first instead of think about the wider kind of network of women?
I feel like that's a fear-based posture just because it grounds itself in lack, like there's not enough for all of us. But regardless of, that sounds judgy, so regardless of anything, I think what I'd rather focus on is that we're at a time where technology has made things incredibly democratic. So there did used to be one person, one job, the token lady, she was the weather lady, or, you know, maybe Barbara Walters, or, you know, like whomever. But now we can create forums, platforms, we can create voices, we can use our voice however we want, online, with blogs, with, you know, YouTube channels. There's just so many ways to, I've always thought that content is king. And so when you're speaking your truth is pure and irreplaceable and unrepeatable. So finding your community is key, and then contributing.
I want to take a step back and discuss your background even before you got into acting.
Yeah.
You grew up far from L.A.
I did.
You were born in Asheville, North Carolina, and raised by adoptive parents.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that you were also North Carolina's junior miss.
That is also true.
So tell us about growing up in North Carolina. Had you always thought you were going to be in Hollywood?
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. No. I mean, I'm not even sure I thought Hollywood is like a real place. So I was like, unicorns, Hollywood, Lucky Charm. Like, you know, it's all sort of the same thing to me. But I was adopted. I was in foster care for a little while, and then I was adopted when I was 6 weeks old. And erroneously, the parents who raised me got this information that my birth mother, they got like a little tiny bit of information on my birth parents. And one of the things they thought they'd found out was that she loved to sing. And so when she was an English major, those were three things I remember. I have since met them, and they're so wonderful. And it was just so wrong, the information. They were like, so your parents are doctors? And I was like, no. And I'm like, so you love to sing? And she's like, no. So in many ways, my life is predicated on a large mistake. But my sweet, wonderful mother who raised me, Jane, tried to give me any opportunity, every opportunity to perform. And so I sang and I danced and I did summer stock and all of that. And that's really sort of what led me to, you know, pageants. It was the 80s in North Carolina. So that's, you know, what you do.
You got some good hair, I bet, back in the day.
Oh, my goodness. Higher the hair, closer to God. But I'm not a competitive human. So I would go and MC instead of competing. So, my mom could still go and, yeah. Sing, climb every mountain while they count the votes and stuff. It was a lot. It was a childhood. I knew I wanted to sing because it means the world to me. My poor mother has buried four husbands, and the first one died when I was in high school. And I also knew that I needed to leave North Carolina, or I would never get the chance to leave North Carolina. So I applied to Yale, and I went to Yale for physics, and I knew I could sing and learn, and I didn't wind up finishing with physics because they are far better at it than I am. But being there just taught me that if you can dream it, someone will help you do it. And that just sort of, from there, I went to New York and did a bunch of Broadway and eventually came out here.
So you're on Broadway.
Yeah.
You're kind of, doing live acting and singing. And then you're kind of have this other entertainment industry career. You alluded to it earlier, but having a job, right? You don't always have a job. You don't always know if you're going to have the next job.
Yeah.
How nervous were you, or how, I mean, is that, I assume, extremely stressful at times?
It's terrifying. I mean, it's terrifying. It's also, I feel like for those given to this sort of thing, there's no other way to live either. So, I can't imagine it any other way, but I haven't felt this particular hit in my stomach in a minute. So it's very familiar, and it is the norm. Like this, the only thing that changes is that sometimes we get a break and get a job. It's like vacation when we get a job, right? But the job is that you hustle. So it's back to hustling.
What was your first big break?
You know, I feel like my first big break was I did an MCI commercial. And it, that was back in the day when the commercials paid a lot. And I helped my friend go to hair school, and I took my mom to Europe, and I just felt like I ruled the world. I don't know that anyone else would objectively say that that's my big break, but probably like another world. I did a soap for a while. Certainly getting to be on Broadway was next level and a dream come true. Mm-hmm. But, still people still, it's as acting is a funny profession where people only, their only way to understand whether or not you're good at what you do is whether you're employed. And unemployment is such part and parcel of acting that, I always feel bad because people are like, what are you doing next? Or what are you doing now? And from on my behalf or my friend's behalf or whatever. And I want to say, she's genius. Did you see her Madea? but you can't. Doesn't matter. Like, it's a whole different thing. It's.
Well, we've also been involved in certain causes throughout the years. You're a big animal rights supporter and have championed organizations like the Humane Society. You've also been involved in politics. Mm. You were a prominent supporter of Hillary Clinton during the 2016 presidential campaign. How do you decide your involvement in political causes?
Oh my goodness. I just like any other citizen trying to use my voice to make the world a little better. I don't ever think about it in an empirical or storytelling way, like the mythology of me. It's really what moves me, certainly with animals, voice for the voiceless. I'm adopted, so I have always felt a kinship that no life is disposable. Like, it kills me to think that animals go to shelters and are killed because people want to like have a breeder make a puppy. That's crazy to me. Again, I'm sounding judgy, but that's my feeling. And the same way with like foster care and children, and that's just goes very deep into my marrow and my heart. Also education, you know, I was a scholarship baby. My mom was a high school English teacher and my dad was deceased. So I got a chance to meet Dr. Richard Light, who was the guy who put me through Yale, which was huge. And because of Scandal, I got to endow a scholarship at Yale. So now I put kids through Yale, and that is probably the thing I'm proudest of to date. Yeah, I don't know. Now I feel like I'm talking about myself and now I'm nervous.
No, it's good. That's what we're here to do. But so was the Clinton campaign the first time you like really stepped into kind of partisan electoral politics?
For sure. I have always felt that democracy is a verb and something we all have to show up for. But I am conflict averse. I'm just not a fighting human. And so speaking about politics had always made me very, very nervous. But there has never been a greater time to really meditate through the nerves and show up for the conversations about equality and inclusion and love and fairness and taking care of our planet and taking care of our people. And for me, the 2016 race was very easy and very clear. I'm a teacher's kid, so the due diligence deep on her campaign and her policies, it was so easy to speak for and on behalf of her. I did 8 states, and it was it turned out to be a real joy. A heartbreak ultimately.
So it's always interesting when celebrities get involved in politics. There's criticism that comes.
Sure.
Positives and negatives. Recently, this Kanye and Chan getting into it on Twitter. One story of Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City, who's stepped fully into the political ring in the New York governor's race. How do you see the role of celebrities in politics, particularly in these kind of polarizing times?
I think everybody's a human being. And I think, first of all, on a pragmatic level, people have forums, right? Kim Kardashian has a forum. She tweets something and a gajillion people see it in a nanosecond and it's out there. So taking that platform seriously is the only mindful, I feel, way to walk through life. But, you know, on a much more realistic level, we're all just people. And I hope everybody raises their voice. I want to know what everybody thinks about the situations at hand. I want to have a conversation. I don't want to do a monologue. I'm not trying to force my views on anybody. I want us all to care enough to work together to move this country in a direction that we all agree on and are all really proud of.
Scandal itself tackled some pretty polarizing political issues. Mm-hmm. In one memorable scene in season 5, Olivia Pope had an abortion. When your character, then Senator Millie Grant, filibustered on the Senate floor to stop the defunding of Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. What was Scandal trying to do there?
Oh, my goodness. That wouldn't be for me to say, because that's, authorial intent, and that would be Shonda, and I do believe Shonda wrote that episode. Her hand is on all of them, but some of them she particularly wrote herself. What I am proud of is that we were always part of the national conversation or the global conversation, and not in a rip from the headlines way, but in a real, like, lawn chair remains one of my very favorite episodes. And so often these episodes were written before things happened, sometimes after things happened, but race was always at the center of scandal. And so shying away from it would be some other show. It wouldn't be Scandal. So I was always proud that we were saying what people were saying at home. And I think that Shonda has spoken to, she doesn't like the word diversity or inclusion, really, but normalization. Because that's what I felt when I watched the Grey's Anatomy pilot. I was like, oh my God, I know these people. Like, this looks like the world I live in. I can't wait to watch more of this. And I feel in that way, though, she was always trying to normalize things. It's also a bit of necessary onus. America's behind the rest of the world in terms of comfort with female leadership. So the first hurdle was having a black woman. The first thing was blackness. Oh, blackness. We haven't had that in 40 years as a lead on network television. Oh my, oh my. And then it was a non-issue because it's always about story. And then it became about gender. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, she's in charge if she's a woman. Oh, well, it's just a story because we're all just human beings and we come in different packages. And I was always proud that Shonda was moving stuff forward. All those line items I said in that filibuster are 100% true. I mean, it's all fact. It's not made up.
171,000 to study the gambling habits of monkeys. 175,000 to determine whether cocaine use leads to risky sexual activity among Japanese quail.
Do you think Scandal would have been different if Hillary Clinton were sitting in the Oval Office right now?
Oh, yeah. We would have ended a year sooner. We definitely got an extra year. We asked Shonda at the beginning of last season in sort of our back-to-school dinner, is it going to end the way you thought it was? Because she's always said, I know where it begins and I know where it ends. And she said, no, I thought it was going to end with the inauguration. But then the world changed and I thought, oh, I've got a couple more stories to tell. So we got this whole extra like year to love and play and create.
I want to switch over to Hollywood and its current kind of social political climate right now, the Me Too movement, Time's Up. Obviously, you've spoken pretty candidly about your own Me Too moment. What's your take on what's happening right now?
Oh, deep gratitude. I mean, it really is that we're even having these conversations, much less that consequences are coming at it's a little amazing, frankly. And I have to imagine that it feels like the rules have changed for those that have always been in power. Like, you know, for Bill Cosby, for example, he's like, this happened so long ago and this is what everybody was doing and I'm in trouble. But we never gave consent. I mean, the issue is consent and having a voice and being an equal. And in terms of just bare bones feminism, just being an equal. Like, you wouldn't do that. I had a line this year in Scandal. Jake and I, he had tried to hold my hand in the Oval Office. And he was like, I just felt really in tune with you. And we'd had a great week. And I was like, did you try and hold Fitz's hand when he had a good week? No, of course not. Like, because we're still seen as possessions, you know? But nowadays, not so much.
What kind of specific things do you think agents or production houses or directors can do differently to make Hollywood a more welcoming space for women?
Well, Inclusion Writer was a beautiful, first step, right, for just Frances to get there and proclaim that. And you saw everyone start to Google. Everyone had their phone out like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. But it matters. It just matters because people so seldom over the course of history are evolved and humble enough to cede power willingly. Usually power has to be taken. And so it matters that the few at the top say, oh, of course, let's have 50-50 on our crew, or not, you know, gender is fluid, so I don't even know how we're going to write the algorithm, but, you know, let's have inclusion because having to fight for it's going to take a long time.
There's been more recently concern about the pendulum swinging too far, that there's a backlash and criticism, that it could go too far in the other direction. A lot of prominent people have said they fear the lack of due process when it comes to some of the accusations against men. What's your take on that?
I think humans are flawed and we're never going to walk through this minefield perfectly. I wouldn't expect us to. Again, I want to believe in the innate good in humans and that we can ferret truth out, although truth is getting tricky these days. It is a very truthy time we live in. I don't want anyone punished for something they didn't do. There's also, though, you know, in many cases, crimes like this are not, they're repeated. So there are numbers of people saying these things. It's not, you know, her word against his. It's usually 80 women's word against his. And that's irrefutable in my book.
We're almost out of time. Yeah. I want to talk to what you are up to currently.
Yes.
You've got several different projects going on. You were recently in A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
You had a lead role in the ABC soap pilot, False Prophets, which we talked about. Talk to us about False Prophets.
Kayla Alpert wrote this, and it's about, it was, she likes to call it Game of Thrones for ladies, but it's sort of set in the pyramid scheme. You know, like people sell Arbonne, or my grandma sold Avon for 60 years. Yes! So I work in a sort of a TJ Maxx, and I have two kids, and I'm living at home with my mom, and have sort of just turned the wrong direction at every crossroads, and meet Vanessa Williams, and she is fabulous and golden and seems to have it all figured out, and she invites me into this world. And but you know, so often the trick is you make more money signing people up than you do selling products. So when I want to go out on my own, it becomes a rivalry.
The drama.
No, the drama. There's a murder in Vegas, so stay tuned.
We are about done, but I want to ask you, you're supportive of Hillary Clinton. Are there any women you'd like to see run for president in 2020?
Yes. I mean, we have a minute yet, of course, but I'm very interested in I'm very interested in watching the field right now. Like, I don't know who it's going to be. Do you think you have your, you've got the intel. I should be asking you that. I mean, we're fond of Kamala because we're from California, right? Yeah. But who do you think? Give me the inside skinny, DC.
I know. Oh, TBD. I think you're right. We got a minute.
It's a minute. It's a little, it's a minute yet. I also don't, I want us not to, like in Ohio right now, it's like Democrat versus Democrat. Mm-hmm. You know, I want us to be strategic. I really, really do. I want us to run wise. Not.
Would you ever want to run for office?
I mean, I do feel like it's a public service in a lot of ways and should be a public service. I don't know how good I would be at it. I think I would be much happier in a municipal setting, like state, city sort of thing. I think heavy is the head, man, that wears that crown and that big white house. That might be a little out of my scope. But then women, don't women always say that?
Yeah, indeed.
So maybe that's why we should all say, just say yes and figure it out.
All right. Well, Bellamy, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Anna. I really appreciate it.
Women Rule is produced by Rena Flores. Dave Shaw is our executive producer, and our booker is Jessica Andrews. If you're a fan of the show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave a review. It helps new listeners find the show. We've got a ton of great guests coming up, so hit that subscribe button, and thanks for listening.